The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, continuing reflections on conditionality. Last time we explored kind of conditionality in general, and I'll just say a few words about it in terms of kind of its place in the teachings, or its importance in the teachings. It's the conditioned nature of experience. That experience is conditioned, is a really foundational understanding that is pointed to in the Buddhist teachings. Not only is our experience conditioned by external kinds of things like weather and there's a whole bunch of different kinds of conditioning. You know, there's just the external stuff that happens to us. There's kind of the conditions that our body meets the world, and like, you know, if we get cut, we'll feel pain, things like that. But then there's the conditioning that is most important in our practice is how our minds condition our experience. And the whole kind of the crux of the Buddhist teaching around how we get caught into suffering and how we can move in the direction of freedom is connected to both the getting caught in the suffering. It's connected to conditioned habits and patterns of mind. The mind affects the body affects the mind. There's this kind of cycle. When something is unpleasant, we don't like it, we don't want it, there's aversion, that affects the mind, that affects then what we do in the world. So there are these kind of patterns and habits, human habits and patterns around how our minds relate to the world. That is one of the key pieces the Buddha pointed to. It's like, we get caught, we suffer. There is suffering in our hearts and minds when we are caught by greed, aversion, and delusion. When we're acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion. When we are motivated by greed, aversion, and delusion, and are acting out of greed, aversion, delusion. When our actions are conditioned by that. He says, suffering follows. There's a famous quote in the very first few verses of the Dhammapada. All is preceded by mind, led by all experience. That's what it is. I'm trying to remember Gill's translation of this. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with the corrupted mind, and suffering follows as the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. The corrupted mind is the mind that is acting out of greed, aversion, and delusion. All experience is preceded by mind, led by mind, made by mind. Speak or act with a pure mind, and happiness follows like a never departing shadow. So this is, this is speaking directly to how our minds are affects how our lives unfold. And so this is really the teaching of conditionality, and the discovery really the Buddha made when he, in his own journey, explored the question: is it possible for humans to be free of suffering? He discovered that it is possible to be free of suffering, but not necessarily possible to be free of pain, not necessarily possible to be free of unpleasant experience. But what we discover as we look at what's happening in our bodies and how our mind is in relationship to it, we see that an unpleasant experience does not have to be a problem for us. That when an unpleasant experience is met with aversion or a desire to reach out to get something pleasant, to get rid, to kind of shift the attention away from the unpleasant, you know, when there's that motivation of greed or aversion around the experience, then that will perpetuate suffering in our minds. So he actually found, and this is a kind of subtle, and he said to have said to himself when he became awakened, when he had this understanding, he's like, wow, this is pretty subtle. I don't know if anybody's going to get this. You know, is anybody going to get this? Is anybody going to understand what I'm talking about here? You know, the difference between an unpleasant experience, an unpleasant experience happens, but that isn't the suffering. Actually, the suffering is the wanting it to be otherwise. And we actually start to recognize that as we look at our experience. We see that when we are meeting experience and there's not aversion there, it's a whole different thing. It's a whole different experience. It can just be an unpleasant experience. And so we begin to understand a little bit about what the Buddha meant by suffering, what he meant by this word dukkha, the suffering of the First Noble Truth, the suffering that is possible to be free of. The key definition of freedom from suffering is freedom from greed, freedom from aversion, freedom from delusion. And so the kind of the conditioning pattern he discovered is that when we act out of greed, aversion, and delusion, we tend to suffer. When we act out of love, compassion, generosity, and wisdom, the opposites of greed, aversion, and delusion, essentially, when we act out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, put more positively, when we act out of non-greed, generosity, non-aversion, love, non-delusion, wisdom, that leads us in the direction of ease, of peace, of happiness. And so this the teaching around conditionality is central both to the understanding of how suffering happens and how we can find our way out of that habitual conditioned pattern. It's interesting because the description of how suffering comes to be, it's described in a teaching called Dependent Origination. And that's kind of, I'm just going to overview it today, a little bit of that teaching, the teaching of Dependent Origination. And it's, you know, it's a cycle. It's a set of 12 conditions that feed into each other, that tend to contribute to be the process by which suffering drives itself. And it's a kind of habitual, human, like natural kind of ways that we tend to relate to experience. Our human system kind of like, well, it wants to feel good. It wants to be happy. It wants to have pleasant things. And so it tries to get those pleasant things. And very naturally, it kind of follows that path. It really took the Buddha's, the brilliance of the Buddha, I think, really to recognize that very wanting, that reaching out to get something, that is the kind of the crux of how that suffering perpetuates itself. As we reach out to get something, we think we're going to be happy, but that thing doesn't last for very long and it falls apart. And then we're left kind of bereft. We don't have that thing anymore, or we're left basically wanting to get the next thing. And so the wanting just keeps us, it propels us in this cycle. And that's basically the cycle of dependent origination. The habitual way that we tend to reach out to get things that are pleasant and get rid of things that are unpleasant. And then when those things change, when the kind of impermanent nature of experience unfolds and happens, we reach out for the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And so that pattern just perpetuates itself. But the Buddhist teachings also include, it looks a little hopeless when you first see or hear the teaching of dependent origination, because it's this cycle. You know, I'll tell you the links right now. I'll tell you what's in the cycle. So starting with ignorance, the description, there's multiple versions of dependent origination in the teachings of the Buddha and the suttas, but one of the key ones starts with ignorance. And when with ignorance as a condition, mental formations come to be. Mental formations are patterns and habits of mind. So based on confusion, based on, and this one's a little harder to understand. We'll get to a detailed unpacking of all of these over the next couple times. So I'm not going to try to detail them all right now. But mental formations are basically habits and patterns of mind. Greed or aversion or a wanting or a frustration or a thought or an intention. So those are all mental formations. And mental formations then condition how our minds are, what our consciousness takes in. That consciousness then conditions mental and physical processes. These first four links are some of the most difficult to understand. And at this point, you know, once we get past these first four, it gets a little bit easier to understand. And so the way I usually go through this is I kind of start in the middle of dependent origination, where it's a little bit easier to understand, and then come back. So we'll work our way back to those first four links over the next few weeks. So we're going to kind of set those aside for now. And so now we have mental and physical processes. We have a body and a mind, basically. And out of that, the mental and physical processes, we have our sense bases. We've got eyes and ears, and so we've got our senses. And those senses receive information. So there's the sense bases, and they contact senses. So eyes, there's the eye and sight, the ear and sound, the body and touch. That's contact. That's the next link, is contact. So there's contact of a sense base. The eye contacted with sight, the ear contacted with sound. That's conditioned. You know, that we have an ear is a condition that allows the contact of the airwaves to hit it. You know, so there's conditioning there. And so with the contact then, based on the contact, and this is where it starts to get kind of interesting, that with that contact, there's a feeling tone. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant, or it's neither pleasant nor unpleasant. It's kind of neutral. Based on that feeling tone, the habit is that when it's a pleasant feeling, We like it, we want it, we want more of it. When it's an unpleasant feeling, we don't like it, we don't want it, we want to get rid of it. A neutral feeling, often we're not so aware of it. So out of that feeling, there's often a craving that follows. When there's something pleasant, we want it. We crave to have more of it. When there's something unpleasant, we crave to get rid of it. Something neutral, we may crave stimulation. Something different completely. So based on feeling, the habitual response is craving. We want something, or we want to get rid of something. Based on that craving, there's the movement often to like follow the intention of that craving to get the thing, to cling to it, to have it. That having then kind of brings in a whole bunch of intentions and kind of agendas to maintain that having. So this is what's called becoming. Becoming is kind of a set of agendas, and it's kind of the congealing around the having to control it, you know, to say, this is mine now, I've got it. So it's a kind of a, the intentions that rally in the service of the clinging, we could say. That's the way that Thanissaro Bhikkhu describes it. I like that. So this is becoming, and becoming is this kind of sense of a me kind of coming into being, the me that is a possessor, the me that's an experiencer, the me that is intending something. And out of becoming, then there is a kind of a, the becoming is kind of the aiming towards, you know, it's kind of like, oh yeah, this is who I'm, I am. This is who I'm going to be. Becoming usually feels pretty good. It's a sticky point for us in this whole process. It feels good. There's a kind of a sense of being in control or knowing where we're going, that kind of thing. And then it goes into a full-fledged kind of like taking birth into an identity. And at this point, when we have like taken birth into an identity, basically suffering follows. Because when there's something that has come into being, something that has arisen, it will decay, it will fall apart. And so aging, sickness, death is said to be the next link, basically. Something has come into being and it's going to fall apart. And that falling apart is said to be where essentially the suffering happens. I think the suffering actually happens earlier. You know, the experience of craving itself is suffering. And so that there's sometimes this this teaching is called dependent co-arising. And that to me actually makes more sense in a way, because as soon as craving arises, suffering is already arising. You know, so it's co-arising with craving. It's not like craving happens and then clinging and then becoming and then birth and then suffering. As soon as there's craving, there's already a kind of a tightening, a congealing, a tension. So this pattern happens a lot, and we'll go into it in much more depth and much more, there'll be much more clarity about this in the coming weeks. But I just wanted to kind of lay it out, you know, just lay out the cycle. But one of the key teachings, that teaching that I described from the Dhammapada, when we act out of greed, aversion, and delusion, suffering follows, like the wagon wheel follows the hoof of the ox. When we act out of wisdom, compassion, generosity, it heads in a different direction. And so, you know, kind of paradoxically, if we turn and apply wisdom, or have heard some teachings that encourage us to apply wisdom to the experience, for instance, of craving, to be curious about what is the experience of craving, what's the human experience of craving, it changes that entire cycle. That entire cycle, I said it started with ignorance, right? I said it started with ignorance. And if we bring in mindfulness, the curiosity about what is this experience anyway, that's bringing wisdom in to the mind. It's bringing wisdom into the experience in that moment. And it shifts the cycle then, it shifts things from being kind of automatically kind of just following that loop of craving, clinging, becoming, birth, suffering, to a whole different process where in watching and exploring being mindful of craving, for instance, just being mindful of craving, the faith can arise, a sense of, oh, this is different. You know, there's a different experience, a sense of, oh, there's something different that's happening here. And then delight or joy can follow. So there's it enters into a different conditioned cycle that we'll talk about in future weeks, which I mentioned a few weeks ago, called transcendent dependent origination, which is basically a set of conditions by which we can let go of ignorance, craving, clinging, becoming. So the conditioning is it's not all bad. We can, having heard the Dharma is a condition, in fact. Hearing the Dharma is a condition that can inspire us to engage, to practice, to bring some curiosity to what's happening. And that begins to move us on to the other kind of conditioning, the conditioning that when acting out of non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion, happiness follows. Happiness starts to follow. So dependent origination is essentially a description of habitual conditions that tend to lead us into suffering. And when we come around to suffering, if we're just engaging with our experience in our lives the way we usually do, when we suffer, we tend to respond to it in our habitual way, which is, how do I get rid of this? How do I fix this? How do I, you know, get out of this? As opposed to being curious about, well, what is this suffering anyway? As soon as we turn to be curious about with mindfulness, what is this suffering? Then we kind of shift into the other conditioned cycle that can transcend this cycle of suffering. But that's not what we've done in our lives much of the time. Instead, when we suffer, we go back to our usual strategies. How do I fix this? How do I navigate this based on what I've learned in the past? And until we learn something of the Dharma, we tend to just meet that suffering with the confusion of our minds about, well, the way to deal with suffering is to get something that I want. The way to deal with suffering is to get rid of this thing that's in the way of feeling good. And so we just end up back in that cycle. So the cycle of dependent origination tends to loop on itself when we are not bringing mindfulness to it, when we're not bringing mindfulness to any aspect of what's happening. And it doesn't actually matter where we become aware in that cycle. There's one of my favorite teachings around dependent origination is a teaching that points to whether you're looking at craving or clinging or feeling tone or the identification of a sense of self. If you're noticing that and are curious about how it's arising, how it's passing away, that will lead you out of the habitual cycle of suffering. So I understand this teaching of dependent origination to be a description of a human process that we tend to be caught in and are unaware that we're caught in. it's a description of a habitual set of things that happen to us kind of almost haplessly that we're involved in. And we can begin to notice this cycle. We can begin to notice this. And as we hear about this teaching, I mean, why it's important, I think, to hear about it is, I mean, first of all, it's pointing to, so one of the fundamental pieces it points to is that it's conditioned, the conditioned nature of suffering, but it's not determined. It's not deterministic. When the conditions change, something completely different can unfold. And so that's an important part of this teaching. It describes a habitual pattern, but it doesn't describe something that we have to be forever locked into. There are ways to understand it, when we see it, when we understand it happening, paradoxically, that very understanding like unwinds it. When we understand it in the moment happening, when we see it happening, understand it not intellectually, but as an experience, that begins to unwind it. So it's a complex teaching, but I have in my own practice found it useful to understand how this works. And then at various times in my practice, like seeing like little bits of it, like maybe two or three links of it, you know, seeing, oh, I see feeling and craving. I see how that works. And even just seeing little pieces of it can be very powerful. And so it's a powerful teaching to understand intellectually, because then as we understand it intellectually, kind of like I described in the guided meditation, you know, just take these words in. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Utejaniya, says, you know, I offer all these teachings and these words, but they're not something to do. Dependent origination isn't something to do. Your mind is doing it. But the hearing it described may then help you to be able to see how it's unfolding in your minds. May start to help you to see what's happening. And that very seeing will be the way towards freedom, will be the way to the releasing of that habitual pattern, that habitual cycle. So more next time. We'll go into a little bit more depth in some of the links. I'm not going to try to do all of them at once, but it's a complex teaching. It's one time, I'll just say this last piece. I know we're a little bit over, but one time the Buddha's attendant, Ananda, came to the Buddha and said, "This teaching on dependent origination, it is such a great teaching and it seems so clear to me. It seems so clear." And the Buddha said, "Don't say that, Ananda. This teaching on dependent origination is profound, and it is because of not seeing this that beings are caught in suffering." So, you know, Ananda understood something of it, but, you know, the Buddha kind of chastened him and said, "Actually, Ananda, you don't quite understand it yet." So, you know, we have to understand that it is a complex teaching, and that's okay. You know, it's okay if we don't understand the whole thing. In my experience, understanding even little bits of it can be very freeing, and starting to see how it functions.